I'm William O'Flaherty. Welcome to a new shorter interview format for the All About Jack podcast and Knowing and Understanding C.S. Lewis YouTube channel. On the program with me is Dr. Charlie Starr. He joins me to discuss The Lion's Country, C.S. Lewis's theory of the real. Welcome back to the program, Charlie.
Always a pleasure to be here, William.
Well, now, as a way to begin to explore your new book, which is entitled The Lion's Country, compare and contrast it with your last title, which is related, and we have a whole series on it, as well as a standalone interview. That book is The Fawn's Bookshelf, which dealt with myth.
Right. So The Lion's Country and The Fawn's Bookshelf are sort of sequels to each other. Loose sequels is a good term. Because what they both have in common is they deal with Lewis's ideas about knowledge. The fancy term is epistemology. So Lewis's thoughts on how we know that we know, and how we can be certain of what we know. So the myth book takes an approach that focuses on myth, but also does it in a way that is somewhat mythic. It's not as direct as the new book. It is, its structure, I think, is more imaginative because it begins with some books from Lewis's Narnia tales. The Lion's Country, if the myth book is more on the taking an imaginative approach that leads to analysis, The Lion's Country, focusing on Lewis's theory of the nature of reality, focuses more, is probably more analytical, probably the most philosophical Lewis book that I've written. And so their similarity is that running through them both as an under theme is Lewis's idea of knowledge, but then each one does deal with a different topic, one with myth, one with reality, though they certainly do have interesting connections to each other.
All right. Well, now thinking about your subtitle, especially addressing something like the theory of the real, sounds, as you noted, it's philosophical in nature. So, you know, how was Lewis qualified, or was he really qualified to deal with matters of philosophy?
Yes, we often think of Lewis either as a theologian or as a fantasy writer or as a teacher of literature, a specialist in medieval and Renaissance literature, and all those things are true. But when Lewis was attending Oxford as a student, he studied several major areas, including classics. And one of the major areas he studied was philosophy. For the longest time, he thought he was going to be a philosophy teacher. That's what he had been aiming for. And it was only as a kind of afterthought that he studied literature and took another degree that focused on English literature. In 1924, he gave a series of lectures on philosophy as a substitute for a term. And he applied for a number of jobs in philosophy. When he was eventually hired to teach at Magdalen College, Oxford, he was hired not just as a literature Don, they referred to them, but also, or a fellow, but also to do some tutoring in philosophy. So he had a very strong background in philosophical thinking. You see this in a lot of his earliest writings, especially writings that aren't as popular, some of which haven't even been published by any kind of mainstream publication, but only in scholarly journals and the like. But yeah, Lewis was very much trained in and capable of dealing with a number of philosophical issues.
Very true. I wanted to make sure that our listeners knew about that. Well, now, in your preface, you write, quote, "Truth about reality is great, but reality itself is so much better." Now, could you give us a brief elaboration of what you mean, recognizing that in your book, reality is not capitalized the first time in that sentence, but it is in the second?
I think the key idea there is to focus on the word about. In Lewis's thinking, truth was often about reality, not the same thing as reality. Now, there are some exceptions to this where Lewis seems to talk about capital T truth. But often when Lewis is talking about truth, he's talking about it in terms of human knowing. And he saw truth as abstract knowledge. That is, we reason our way to truth. Now, what truth is then, for most of Lewis's thinking, is whenever something that is in our head corresponds with something in the real world, that is truth. Truth is occurring. So if I look up into the sky and I conclude the sky is plaid, I am wrong. And what I know is not true, but false. If I agree the sky is blue, if I see puffy clouds in it, my knowledge, and I acknowledge that in my head, then there is truth occurring. So Lewis believed that our reason was very abstract and that our knowledge was often abstract. He referred to reason as incurably abstract. And so in his essay, Myth Became Fact, he mentioned very specifically, truth is always about something. Reality is what truth is about. So reality matters more than truth because truth is a step back from reality. Now, again, in sort of a heavenly world, that might be different, where truth and reality correspond. Or in the incarnation, when Christ is on earth and Pilate says to him, "What is truth?" And Jesus doesn't answer because Pilate is staring at capital T truth in the face. But for the most part, human knowing, when it is true, is a kind of abstract knowledge that is one step removed from reality.
This is all very, very fascinating to me. And Charlie and I were talking beforehand. I hate that we're purposely limiting things so people will kind of be left wanting more. The way that you lay your book out, The Lion's Country, go ahead and briefly describe how it's arranged and then why you presented it the way you do.
Well, I'm happy to say that the foreword for this book is written by the wonderful Inkling scholar Diana Glier. And another thing that this book, The Lion's Country, has in common with The Fawn's Bookshelf is that the forewords written by Diana here and by Devin Brown in the first book are in many ways the strongest part of the book. So I keep getting people to outwrite me and I put them at the front of my books, and that's wonderful. In terms of the organization of the book, then the first three chapters essentially talk about why it matters. All right. Why do we need to talk about Lewis's ideas about the nature of reality? So I established that up front. What follows then in the middle chapters is a kind of chronological approach to Lewis's ideas on reality, focusing on his early beliefs, his beliefs once he became a Christian, and how those are worked out in a variety of his books. This leads then to the need in the final chapters to do some emphasizing, where in the middle chapters I cover the main points. There are three other points that really need to be covered with more detail. One is the idea that Lewis saw reality as hierarchical, and I spent actually a couple of chapters talking about this idea that reality is vertical, that there are natures perhaps piled upon natures, and that there is supernature even above that. Then I have a chapter on Lewis's really important idea, an idea called transposition. It comes out of those chapters on hierarchy. And finally, then a chapter on sacrament, which is, again, a very key idea for Lewis and reality. In sacrament, all things come together, multiple levels of reality, reality that is poetic as well as literal. All these things come together in the sacramental. And so that needed to have its own chapter, and that chapter then includes a discussion on this idea of epistemology, of Lewis's thoughts on the nature of knowing. And then I felt like the final chapter really needed to focus on what Lewis considered to be the most real thing there is, and that is God and the heavenly world. So chapter 10 in the book focuses on Lewis's vision of heaven. In part, it repeats some of what occurs earlier in the book, But then it adds to that, and then it concludes with something that's absolutely wonderful, and that is a never-before-published passage, almost 1,000 words, in which Lewis describes what it might be like to see the face of God. And that's the structure.
Yes, very good book. At the front end, I usually do note when a book is out. This book just came out, for those who are not aware, just at the end of 2022. That is when we're also recording at the end of December, but this is a brand new book. If you're listening to this recording, around the time that it is released. Well, now, dealing some with your content here then, Lewis is not just known for fiction, but let's explore some of what you write in your third chapter, especially. It's one of the things that you cover is learning from the, and in parentheses, fictional real. So what does Lewis show us? In particular, you were noting about Out of the Silent Planet.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and focus on what he says in Out of the Silent Planet. In the book, our hero is taken to Mars, where he expects to encounter all kinds of creepy, crawly, bad things. And this is because he has been taught to believe that aliens are going to be creepy and crawly and malevolent through the reading of the science fiction that preceded him, through the works, for example, of H.G. Wells. And what the hero learns when he gets to a completely different planet is that the planet is beautiful, the creatures there are beautiful, and the true invaders are actually humans, not the other way around. And when he learns that, his fear is completely lost to him. So he's been taught something wrong about the nature of reality, born out of an evolutionary view of reality that says, all of reality is about the survival of the fittest. Well, if that's the case, if the aliens come, they're going to try to get rid of us so that they can dominate in our particular world. And instead, he flips that and says, no, human beings are fallen creatures, and creatures outside the world are actually much better than we are. And so he wants to create a vision of reality that is far less naturalistic and based on something that's more supernatural, and that the vision he creates then can help us to see that the naturalist approach to reality might not actually be reality itself. It can enliven our imaginations. But for the hero Ransom, then, it is a journey in which he experiences things that, again, enliven his imagination, but also instruct him about the nature of reality through experience. So what he thought he knew, what he guessed he knew, which came from bad ideas and bad imaginings, are corrected through his experiences of the real. And this changes the way he imagines and thinks about everything. And of course, William, what's really fascinating is the idea that Lewis believed that the imagination, which certainly can connect to reality, but doesn't always, can nevertheless be used to show us the real in excellent ways, in ways beyond simply looking for truth, but in ways that bring meaning, meanings that ultimately can be looked at as true as well. And that's when the epistemology gets wonderfully complicated.
And you have much more to say about other places in Lewis's fictional writings that relate to this topic. Very fascinating, but something that we unfortunately cannot dive into. We want to go ahead and switch then to the on the nonfiction side. You can have your pick of any single work from Lewis that you used and share some of what we can learn about the real.
If we're looking at a single book in which Lewis spends the most time talking about the theme or the idea of reality, what we want to look at is the book Miracles. It's one of his more difficult works of apologetics, but it is excellent. And of all the sources I refer to, quote directly in The Lion's Country, Miracles probably made up 25%. So that's really where he spends a great deal of time talking about the nature of reality. And for Lewis, just to give a kind of a summary of the significance in Miracles, What matters most is to see that the real is, again, hierarchical, that nature is not all there is, but there is also supernature.
Well, now you've, you know, we obviously mentioned one fictional work out of The Silent Planet. You just gave a title for nonfiction, Miracles. But thinking about the many books and essays by Lewis, which relate to your theme, what are some additional titles, maybe two or three more books, as well as two or three essays? There are many more that people can find you referencing in your book, but go ahead and recommend some for those who want to dive deeper. Of course, we want to encourage them to get a copy of your book, which is again entitled The Lion's Country, C.S. Lewis's Theory of the Real. But diving directly into Lewis, what are some titles of books as well as essays to especially look into?
I think in addition to Miracles, it's important to look at Mere Christianity, as Lewis describes what reality is like in there to a great extent. I think it's worth looking at his fiction work, The Great Divorce, to see the connection between being and the real and hierarchy. I think it's really important to take a look at Lewis's book, The Abolition of Man. Because in addition to seeing reality as hierarchical, Lewis also sees another kind of reality. So there is nature and there is supernature, but there is also a reality called the good. And that is a really significant idea, because when we think of good, we don't think of what is, we think of what ought to be. So when we say, for example, murder is wrong, that certainly is the way things ought to be. And yet, in reality, murder happens. So can ought statements ever be equated with is statements? And Lewis's reply to that is yes. And he makes that clear in The Abolition of Man, along with elsewhere. And his point is that the reality of the moral good, moral reality, is just as real as any kind of physical and concrete reality we might experience anywhere else. In terms of essays, then, I would say the most important essay for someone to look at is Lewis's essay, Myth Became Fact, which is where my two books then come together. The essay is both about myth and about fact or reality. So that's a very good place to start. Another good essay to look at is Lewis's very strange little essay called Bluspals and Phalansferies, which deals with the theory of knowledge, with the epistemology, but then how that connects to how we know through our imaginations and how we know through reason. The language of religion is also a very good short essay to deal with and talking about the real and, again, how we know. And doubtless there are more essays, but there are some good places to start right there.
We do encourage people to get a copy of Charlie Starr's book, The Lion Country, as well as his earlier title. And we'll have a link in the description or show notes. Depending on the format that you are partaking in, the Fawn's Bookshelf is his other one. But Charlie, let's go ahead and just wrap up then by having you share a little bit about yourself and some of your other writings not yet mentioned.
So I am a professor of English at Alderson Broaddus University in the little town of Philippi, West Virginia, and I only live about an hour away, an hour south from William O'Flaherty, and it's nice to be close to a fellow Lewis friend and fan and scholar, and I've been teaching English and some humanities and some theology for about 30 years now. I also teach for Northwind Seminary, where we have a doctoral program in the Romantic theology of the Inklings, including Lewis, Tolkien, Charles Williams, and Owen Barfield. I am happily married 37 years and have two grown children and a granddaughter who is awesome. And my kids are doing wonderful. I've been writing steadily, publishing steadily, probably since around the year 2000. I have a few Bible studies out, and I have a number of chapters in a variety of anthologies and anything from C.S. Lewis or J.R.R. Tolkien to pop culture studies. And Dan, I've written three books on C.S. Lewis. We've talked about two of them today. And then I also dabble in fiction, and I've written a children's book. But if I could encourage your audience to look at anything else I've written, I'd encourage them to take a look at my science fiction, beginning with a book called The Heart of Light, A Tale of Solomon's Star. And we've talked about those books a little bit on some of your other shows. And all my books, there's three in the series so far. They're available on Amazon. And what I'm interested in writing fiction is Lewis's idea of the importance of revitalizing imaginations and doing so in a way that doesn't present just storytelling sermons, which is appropriate when you're doing sermons or when you're telling parables, but stories that people are just interested in reading. Lewis's literature is worth reading, first of all, because it's really interesting, because it's really well written. He would say that every piece of literature is both a logos, a message, and a poema, a piece of crafted art. And Lewis said that what we need is not more Christian books, but more Christians writing books about other topics with their Christianity latent or their worldview sort of apparent in the text, but not the main point of the text. So I've tried to write some science fiction that can appeal to a lot of people, but then also has influences like Tolkien or Lewis and my Christian worldview behind it. And I think the listeners here might really enjoy taking a look at some of those books.
Yes, I definitely encourage the listener to explore the other titles that you've done in addition to the one that we are talking about today. Well then, Charlie, thank you for being on the program today.
You have always been a great encouragement to me. I have so much fun when you and I get together to talk, and this has been no exception. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Charlie Starr about his book, The Lion's Country. Again, I'm William O'Flaherty. My podcast of over 10 years is called All About Jack, and on YouTube, my channel is entitled Knowing and Understanding C.S. Lewis. Be sure to check out a new 6-minute feature I started in late 2022 entitled The Latest on C.S. Lewis. It features timely and timeless information about Lewis. Check the description or show notes for links to what was mentioned on the program today. Finally, everything I do related to Lewis is centralized at the website EssentialCSLewis.com. And in case you didn't know, I've written two Lewis-themed books. The Misquotable C.S. Lewis was released in 2018 and examines 75 quotations credited to him that he either didn't write, or paraphrases of something he did, or without the context could be misunderstood. Then in 2016, my enhanced study guide to the Screwtape Letters came out. It's called C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell. Thanks again for listening. Please consider liking and sharing this program with others.